Hey everybody, Chris Lindsay here, and you're listening to Pitch List. We want to discover what makes creative people tick. Join us as we explore what it means to be a writer, and more importantly, what it means to be a person. Remember why you love music, and welcome to Pitch List. This episode of Pitch List is sponsored by Home, more than just another co-working space. It's everything you need to grow your music career under one roof. Stay tuned to hear more, and later in the episode, we'll be giving out an exclusive coupon to help you save on your first month with Home. And now let's jump right into the show. Our guest today is Nashville-based artist and writer, Trent Dabbs. Trent has recently released his 11th solo record called Positano. As is often the case, Trent has made quite a few co-writing stops on his musical journey, working with the likes of Ingrid Michaelson, Ashley Monroe, Joy Williams, and Casey Musgraves, including one song, High Horse, on Casey's Grammy-winning album, Golden Hour. We sat down one morning here at Amyland and had a long, rambling chat about singing and songs, and I was absolutely charmed by his honesty and insightful takes on songwriting. I hope you enjoy my interview with Trent Dabbs. So you are your own publisher.
Right.
So it seems like we're living in a new era. Back when I started here, you really needed a publisher.
Yeah.
Because they... I wouldn't say they had the town locked down, but it was hard to make it as a songwriter without a publisher.
Yeah.
Just to get the contacts, to get the co-writes, just the cachet of having the publishing deal in the first place. But we're now in an age where a lot of people are keeping their own publishing, which is, you know, way better.
Yeah. I mean, when we first moved here, the only publishing deal I ever had was with Steve Marklin.
Okay.
And, I mean, he was so kind.
He knows what he's doing, man.
Yeah.
He knows how to handle songwriters.
Right.
You know, and writers need encouragement, man.
100%.
You know what I mean? It's like they need to hear they
feedback.
Can do it.
Yeah.
And feedback. And, like, positive feedback. Like, you're like, well, I got this co-write and I'm nervous, and like, no, man, you're going to knock it out of the park. People undervalue how good that is for a writer.
So
don't you
true.
Think?
100%. I mean, I still need that all the time. Like,
yeah.
In general, you just need that kind of encouragement because you feel like you're supposed to just believe in yourself every 5 seconds of the
right,
day. You know,
right.
Like, you only carry it so far.
And if you think about it, now you write a lot for your projects and you write a lot with artists who are doing their projects. So that's a little more self-contained and you know where these songs are headed.
Right.
But even so, we don't get a lot of feedback after we write a song. It could be a year before it gets cut.
Totally.
It could get knocked off the record or, you know, and then when you're just pitching songs, you know, it's even worse because you really don't. And I'm sure you do that too, you know, but I think it's a critical role that a plugger, the publisher plays to, like, you know, you're doing good.
Right.
You're doing good.
Yeah.
Because don't you think writers are like baseball pitchers? I mean, it's like it's all in our heads.
Right.
You know?
And if you told that pitcher, hey, remember when you threw that no-hitter?
Yeah.
Like, go in there tomorrow and do that again, they wouldn't be able to do it, you know?
Right,
so,
right. But a pitcher can get in a slump and he doesn't know why he's like doing everything he did before, but he's not throwing strikes.
Yeah.
And then he's got those people in his life that know how to get him back to throwing strikes. And that's what a publisher does, I think. That's what they should do.
And that takes so much time to finesse that.
Yes, it does.
To know who those people are, especially.
Yeah.
You know, that know how to speak into your creative like work and make it
great way to say that, because I think as people songwriters are very critical of themselves.
Yeah,
because being critical about your work is a necessary skill.
Right.
Really, my very first publisher, who was old school guy, he was hilarious, man. He used to say, however honest you can be with yourself is how good your songs can be. Right?
Yeah. And I like that.
Yeah. And so I guess it's a necessary thing to be critical of your work, but it can keep you in this place, you know, where you're not happy and where you don't see that you're doing good.
Yeah. I mean, speaking into that too, that is such wise words that he said. Like, if you know yourself, then you kind of know what needs to be said that in the context of like your mm-hmm. life, and mm-hmm. That's pretty much all you can do, you know, like to make a great song. That yeah. I think about that a lot when yeah. I'm writing.
Talk about that.
Well, I know that when I'm with an artist that I'm a fan of, which I try to do as much as possible, I like bringing out what I'm a fan of, like
yeah,
that I see in them, and you know, I only know what I think is good. That is all.
Right.
Like these people that are matter of fact, you know, I can make a hit, I can do this. Like I don't trust anyone that says that they know that.
I agree.
So it's very easy for me to be a fan of a lot of art these days and then press into what I love about what they do.
And so you feel like when you're in the room with, we'll put a name in, Casey Musgraves, right?
Right.
You're a fan, number one,
mm-hmm.
and you know what you love about her. But here's the trick, man. Probably what you love about her is what her other fans love about her.
Right.
So you're kind of helping her stay in that groove, in that spot.
Yeah. I mean, she's so inspiring that I'm in a band called Sugar in the High Lows with another artist, Amy Stroop, and we did a tour with Casey all over the UK, and I'm great friends with her band. I've known them forever, and when she was starting, she even like called up and said, can you help me find a band? And I was like, of course, this is the musical draft, and mm-hmm. I would love for my friends to go your way. And of course, like, I mean, she took off so fast that it was like, hey, are you guys going to come back in town so we can make a record? Anyways, when we were touring together, it was so fun to see her every night. And then just the melodies, the straightforwardness, how it just felt timeless the mm-hmm. way that she was delivering
these
things.
She does feel timeless.
And when we got back, I was like, man, you know what? It was more convicting to me than anything. I was like, I need to write more literal songs. Why is that so hard? I can answer that because I feel like I'm scared it's going to sound like a ninth grade poem. But the truth
is... Well, when you say more literal, like songs about...
Just straightforward songs.
Yeah, yeah. I love... Like, yes.
I didn't really ever have to do that for years and years because the songs that I was writing... would work in all these TV shows. And if anybody asked me the genre I played, I would say heavy mellow. That's just like the vibe. It's just vibey, like whatever
That's
is
funny.
Feeling. And I didn't have to write these literal songs. And all I want to do is grow as a writer. So when I was watching, you know, Casey and everything that I was feeling, I was like, I wonder what is making me feel that. And I think a lot of it is just how direct it was. And
yeah.
So I get back and I'm like, I need to try to write a direct song. And it was like so much harder than, you know, I thought.
Well, yes. And I think it requires a commitment.
Sure.
And I think you've put your finger on something that I've noticed. And I don't know exactly how to say this, but artists that don't work,
uh-huh.
okay, tend to be artists that are not doing that. So they're sort of hiding behind their guitar.
Right.
Like when they sing, I feel like, they're playing guitar too loud. It's like they're just not willing to make that just terrible commitment in which they could be judged.
Right.
You know, and the great performers and the great artists, they lay it out there, man.
Yeah.
And the direct songs do that.
Right.
And one thing I wanted to say about Casey is my overall take of her from the outside that I love the most. She appears to not give a shit.
Right. She does.
Now, I don't know if that's true, But when I say not give a shit, I mean to be a quote-unquote commercial country act.
Right.
She is 100% integrity.
You know,
and it works.
I'm feeling that every single year that I do this, I feel it more that the people that don't care and they're just truly living their art.
Right.
It's so much more inspiring to me year by year. Like, and I, when I look back, I'm kind of like, why do I keep listening to Lucinda Williams? Because I remember seeing her.
Yeah.
And she was on stage and the things that she was saying, she was slurring everything, but it didn't matter. Like,
oh, she's,
I was seeing, I mean, like the real thing. Same with Neil
Tom
Young.
Tom Waits.
Yep.
Neil
Tom
Young.
Waits.
He's a little more arty.
Still exist, you think? I mean, other than Casey, because I feel like maybe that's why it's easy to sift through all the noise
think,
when you hear.
Yeah, they do. Stapleton can get there.
Pop music is like that too. I feel like when I heard like John Belly and his lyrics are so strong and they're stout. It's like he's saying what he actually feels, and it's not doesn't sound like it's written catered to.
No.
To a radio station or something.
But I think maybe, don't you think people identify even more?
Yes.
We're listening to this band, Arctic Monkeys.
Sure.
That guy, I was aware of them, but I kind of, we've been diving in a little bit deeper. Amy got really into them. His lyrics are crazy.
Crazy. His phrasing is incredible.
But incredible.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes he's saying stuff that's just random. And then in the middle of it, he'll just say something that's just fucking unbelievable.
Right.
And I can't figure out when it's going to happen.
I remember hearing that, Why'd You Only Call Me When You're High song. And
yeah.
I was like, that is a song I wish I would have written. That song is amazing.
So you're like a big Sync guy.
Yes.
I think I first started hearing about you because I did some work with the Civil Wars. Uh-huh. And we had a song that got synced, and I think you got on the same show. Then you did a bunch of work on Nashville.
Yeah.
So a lot of your music is very sync ready because I think your music's emotional.
Yeah.
You think that's the case?
I do. And in the last 9 years, it's changed so much. The music, sync music, that is. When I started, this was on the heels of, I had the one publishing deal here in Nashville for a year and a half. That company had folded. And then I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I have to keep doing this. And this company in LA, like, put two of my songs on Grays. And, you know, I made...
What was that company? Was it Golden Road?
Secret Road?
Secret Road.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. That was
they
when
got a lot of syncs, didn't
they? Did. They did. And that was when...
Golden Road.
That was when it started. Like, that company had started, and there was just a handful of us. I mean, now I think there's 130 at least sync companies. And I was very fortunate to have the music that I was writing just work for these shows. It wasn't like trying to write for a brief or doing anything like that.
Right.
Just that's the way it always worked for years and years. And I just kept thinking, how is this so? And this is at a time where like Ryan Adams or whoever would be too cool for TV. You know what I mean? Now everybody is like trying to hit that target. And it was just years and years of that, of kind of having disbelief that I just kept working, and it would allow me to tour and play those songs, and that's the beauty of it, is it incentivized, you know, more art. It's like that's when we went on tour with Ingrid, and I got to watch her every night, and I'm like, I really want to write with her, but it's usually better if it's the artist's idea. And then when it was, when we got to write some great songs.
And you wrote probably her biggest hit, right?
I think so.
I think
it's her most streamed.
Barry Dean, was it Girls Chase Boys?
Mm-hmm.
That was a big hit.
That was a big song.
That was a big pop hit, right?
It was.
How did that feel?
Amazing. I knew nothing about like a
you were indie
hot
guy
AC.
You were an indie guy getting lots of cool syncs.
Sure, the indie that could is like what my wife and I always say about
our
company.
So you're like an indie guy, and then all of a sudden you're right in the middle of that's the big time.
Yeah. And we really had no idea, like, until it started climbing the charts, and that was an amazing time to own our publishing and just do our own thing. And like I was saying with the licensing, it was like I had a year with a publisher, having the musical blind dates, which in hindsight was really great because I needed to learn how to write.
Right.
And be around all these other people.
But it's taxing.
It is. It's hard. It's great to have a team of people to bounce things off of. But mm-hmm. when that company had folded and then I got these syncs, it was like, man, we just made more money off of two syncs than a year of a publisher. And it's fortunate, you know.
Now, on your syncs, were you co-writing a lot of those songs, or were they some 100% songs?
No, they were. A lot of them were 100%. And I also have a great producer friend that's kind of like a musical translator for me. Like, he can...
And who's that?
Jeremy Bowes.
Okay.
He's here in town, and he knows...
So he's like, you guys have a... He understands you.
He really does, yeah. I can say all the random, you know, quirky things that he would actually comprehend. Mm-hmm. And be able to sonically translate that, you know. And I think every artist or every writer really needs that kind of team, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You need that.
You got to find your people.
I mean, nowadays I know everyone's trying to do everything in-house. And and speaking of taxing, it's kind of like, I'm still trying to learn. It's like when you know your role, you can do so much better.
Yeah. And I wonder... I think it is good to do a lot of stuff in-house, but also learning how to properly delegate.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to get bigger things done, you have to. There's no way, you know.
Yeah.
So but
I was
gonna
say
going to
say one more
Keep
thing
going.
Is that I'm not saying I haven't tried to look at a brief and write, but I can't do it. Like, it's kind of like if somebody says, hey, I need you to go write this song called Turtles, then you're like...
it never works. And the easier... quote unquote the target is to hit, the worse it gets.
Right.
Like, they already like you, they want you to have the spot, just do it. And it's just, man.
Did you feel that pressure when you had your first hit? Was it like a team of people saying, hey, do you mind doing that again?
Yes. Well, when we had Amaze, that was my first single.
Uh-huh.
So it went big. And it was a big pop hit too.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people wanted another Amaze. But I pretty quickly realized it's impossible to repeat.
You know what's funny is that there's a couple guys that came into town. They had written that Bourne song, Electric Love.
Yeah.
Which I'm crazy about that song and that whole record. And so the pitch was kind of like, hey, do you want to write with these guys? And I'm like, well, yeah, that's rhetorical. And they come in town and I'm so excited because I'm thinking, man, I want to see their process. I want to see how they... And they were like, well, hey, I'm like, what are we doing? And they're like, well, we want to write a country song. And I was like, why? I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I was like, why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
And they're like,
they always do.
Because they actually have an appreciation for old school country. And and I was like, well, they were like, we just want to we want to learn how to. And I'm like, well, so do I. I've been trying to learn for 15 years now, but we can write one, but when I go to LA, I want to write a pop song.
But I've seen a lot of big pop writers come into town, and they understand the power of the country market. And I think a lot of them figured out it's kind of a 4-year program, no matter how you slice it.
Maybe five. In this case, it was a little different just because they're such good writers. And one of them, Tommy English, he's a producer. And so he actually bought a place here for a year and a half, and we were writing all kinds of stuff.
And that's a better way to do it, because he's immersing himself in the...
Totally. And he's the one that ended up writing High Horse on Casey's
record.
But
see, he made that commitment, and it wasn't just about the commitment. It's the fact that he put himself here.
Yeah.
He dives in, and he can learn the intricacies of country music.
Yeah.
Like, if I want to go to L.A. and do electropop, I'd have a little education in front of me.
Yeah. That's kind of what's happening right now. It's like I've made so many LA trips just so I can try to get immersed into that and into the pop scene. Because in the same way, you know, I could show up there and I'm sure they probably look at me as like, okay, you're bringing pop. What's happening?
Well, I can imagine you walk into an LA room and they're like, think Casey will like this one?
Right. Yeah.
That's going to be their first thing. And you're like,
oh. I'd be like, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, well, you don't know why. Yeah, how would you know?
And I think it makes more sense, really, for me to... That's why it makes sense to reach out to artists that, like, I'm a fan of, So there's a direction and intention on it, you know?
Right. And you can actually bring your heart in because you have respect for them and you love what they do and it makes you excited.
Yeah.
It makes you a better rider when you go in there. Let's go back. Wrong. You're from Mississippi.
I am.
Jackson.
Yep.
Deep South.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a huge accent.
I don't. It filters out, but whenever I'm talking to my dad, my friends are like, you must be talking to your dad.
Do you have a couple beers? Does it come out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it though. He'll call and leave a message and just be like, just want to hear your voice. Hope you're doing good. Like mm-hmm. he'll say stuff like, you know, you start a sentence.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just good. I love accents.
Me too.
It's like I respect someone more when I hear an accent. No,
I love them too. So you came from Jackson.
What did
you want to be when you grew up? Were you want to be a singer-songwriter?
I didn't even know that was going to be an option, honestly. I wasn't certain what I was going to be doing. I thought maybe I would be a shrink. I mean, I went to Mississippi State and studied psychology for like 5 years. And
that
then
totally makes sense.
Then I switched it to ed psych the last year just to be done with school. And
right. I mean, I think, do you know a songwriter who isn't a great therapist? I think that's the process.
Yeah.
If we were writing today, we would sit down and sort of square off and figure out where we had common ground on the human perspective.
Right. Just kind of mining for that title that they have in them that
they
didn't know.
Yeah, but that's, I think I see that completely.
I'm fascinated with just the writing process too. Every day if I can be in a different room and see how someone approaches the process, like that stuff gets me so excited. I mean, I've seen moves made in rights where it's like deferred credit, which shows me that this writer has been doing this for a long time because they don't have to have the credit for something and they're deferring it on an artist. Like we're talking about, just have a long conversation and then bring up a title that person had just said. So it was like some title that they had inside them they didn't know. I've seen, you have the track guys that are pressing spacebar and you're top lining it.
Yeah.
You have the people that are not scared to start with absolutely nothing. Which is slightly terrifying.
You have the people that want an idea on the table.
Yeah.
They're very nervous about starting without an idea.
There's producer writers that I know that will start by just like playing some, just jamming a little bit. And I love that. I don't know mm-hmm. why that seems so novel now, because it's like the way it always used to be.
Yeah, I think it's true, man. When I first started writing when I was a kid, that's how it always was.
Yeah.
Start jamming and you got like a chord sequence you liked, you know, or the way, you know, just the sound, you get some kind of little vibe on your guitar or your piano and then start throwing in some words.
Yeah.
You know, but it was all.
It's like the words will come. They'll be whatever.
Yeah.
And then I didn't even know what concept writing was until I worked with Natalie Himby 8 years ago or something. And now I'm obsessed with it. Like,
yeah.
I feel like there needs to be a central concept.
Well, there does.
Yeah.
When it went right, there was usually a pretty solid concept.
Yeah.
There was a good idea. There was a title on the table to write to. I call it dark alley writing, which I still like.
Yeah. How is it dark? Tell me.
Well,
that's
when you just take off. Like you said, no title, no concept.
Yeah.
You just start rolling. That's so you're going down a dark alley. You don't know where you're going to end
up.
Okay.
Got it.
The problem with that is that you can get shit you love. Verse, love it.
Mm-hmm.
Top of a chorus, killer. And then you get down to the hook, man, and you're just like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or you have a very underwhelming title at the end of all of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to have some sort of guidelines, but...
Right.
But I feel like if somebody says, write this, then there's something in me that goes, oh, I can't, no, I'm not doing that.
Okay. I get it. That's not how I do it. And maybe it's like, that's not what I was doing when I got this song on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Or when I got this cool thing. It didn't happen like that. Maybe it's right,
yeah,
you know, for you. Don't go away. Pitch List will be right back after the break. Our friends over at Home Nashville have partnered with PitchList on this episode to give you an exclusive discount on their services, only for podcast listeners. Home is everything you need to grow your music career under one roof. They have 24/7 access, in-house recording studios, rehearsal spaces, writing rooms, networking events, and more. And for those of you not yet in Nashville, Home even has an online community where you can connect with other creatives in your city and get access to music feedback, mentoring, and more. To get your first month in the Home online community free or $10 off your first month of any other membership level, go to helpingmusic.org and enter the code PITCHBYPITCH, all one word, all lowercase, pitch by pitch. And now, back to the show.
Well, let me ask you this, because I the other day, like, if I have something that I'm truly excited about, like I had a concept and I'm driving and I shouldn't be typing lyrics, I pull off to the side, I like write the whole verse and chorus, and I'm like, oh, this is good. I think a lot of people will save that and keep it for themselves or wait for this like huge, you know, right, co-write to heaven. And I feel like if something's given to me that day, then I'm going to give it away. I like to whoever.
I know lots of people who agree with that.
My the problem is like if I get really excited about it, then it's hard to get all the other opinions in it. You know what I mean?
Right. So walk in with this thing you feel like you're sharing with the class that's fabulous, and then they start saying things like, yeah, that's cool, but I think it should twist this way.
Yeah.
I like that part of the title. Your lyrics, no. Yeah. But we'll take this part, that part.
Yeah.
Not that.
just picking.
And they start picking over it.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It does.
It sucks. I have it happen all the time, and that's the process, though. I think you have to trust the process. I think co-writing the reason it works is that it makes things more commercial.
Right. Do you enjoy that more, having more people?
I like three.
Yeah. That's the perfect number, really.
If I look at my track record, I can point to lots of first-time three-way co-writes that got cut.
Really?
Yes.
That's awesome. I mean, that's really smart. I think it's great like to evaluate that so you know, instead of wasting more time, you know, you're just like honing in on your craft.
Well, and you know, everybody listening, you can think, I mean, give me a percentage of songs that you write that are 100% and songs that are co-written.
Oh, the 100%, it's like one out of every 10.
So you do a lot of co-writing.
Yeah, yeah. Even if I've gotten to the point now where it's like, I'm so used to having an editor in the room. Like I tried to write by myself the other day, and it was like 9 different verses. And I was like, dang, how come I can't just settle on this? But I have to have that person saying, nah, that didn't make sense.
You right.
know? I mean, and even if it sounds harsh, I don't care. I just want to know, because I know what I think makes sense, but a lot of times it isn't.
When you're in that space, critical thinking is not in the driver's seat.
Right.
So in order for you to edit yourself, I think you have to get out of the driver's, you know, you have to get out of that and then look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe when you're in that place and you've got a co-writer, they're able to instantly do that.
Yeah.
And you're just in the fun zone.
In the fun zone.
You know what I mean? You're in the fun zone, but shit's going haywire too.
Yeah. I feel like it's much easier to play the editor.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, you can sit there and be like, doesn't gravitate. I don't know.
Well,
do that.
I think it's because you can edit at any time.
Right.
Right. And it's not, you don't always get in the fun zone.
Right.
You know, it doesn't always happen.
I mean, I was working with a band the other, it was like at least three months ago. But this one guy in the band, he's like, it's the guy that usually gets the least amount of attention, which is the bass player. And he's like, I've had this title for a long time called Deep Water. And I was like, that's a sick title.
Yeah,
and
I
we started
that.
Like, I was just goofing off and riffing on this gospel-y sounding song. And they were like, oh, that's great. I was like, for real? I mean, just happened. Like, I wish it it did, you know, normally, you know,
right,
like an
right.
episode of Nashville where right. you're just like, yeah, but we just wrote
really,
this.
You really tapped in. You just,
and it all came from that guy's title that, yeah. you know, he's probably thrown that around times before. I don't know, but
that day, just, you,
I got to be the editor for a second, you know?
Yeah.
And it was nice. I mean, I don't like it when someone edits if they don't have something to bring. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
It's like, it's easy to be like, nope.
But it's true.
I mean, maybe that's just true in general. Like, it's easier to say what you don't like before right. what you want. It's like, right. where do you want to eat tonight? Oh, I'll say this restaurant. No. And then, what about this? No. It's like, where do you want to eat? I don't know. It's like, yeah. when yeah. people just know what they want, that's, it's yeah. attractive. That's attractive to, with an artist. It's like, I got this to say. I really want to say this. You're like, oh, great. Let's extend that.
You're right, man. That's a great analogy.
That's like the easiest
yeah, oh
thing.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And the delivery being everything is huge too, you know? It's like one lyric doesn't, if Chris Martin sat down and started singing "The Truth Is I Miss You," I'd be like, oh man, that sounds insane. And if it was like somebody else that had a twang and was like,
what a great, I mean, what a great thought.
I would be like, I don't,
if somebody, yeah,
it's all like in the
That's
confident
an incredible
delivery.
Song that he did.
Yeah.
But if you and I walked in a room, there's plenty of co-writes. If we said, I got a title, I miss you, they'd be like,
yeah,
what? Where, what?
Yeah.
You got a twist with that, or what? You got something else to go with that? Or, I mean,
or I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. What do you guys think? You know,
yeah.
I'd be like,
yeah,
no.
No. A lot of the great songs break all those rules, man.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one danger of co-writing in Nashville that I would caution, is there is a group think at any given time, and it's not necessarily right, you know, because there are things that you're not supposed to write about that might be great.
You know,
forever artists like no drinking songs, and then the bro country kind of came back in, but there's always these rolling rules, you know.
I mean, it's funny because I believe that too. And this girl I was working with the other day, Savannah Connolly, she's incredible. And she was like, I want to write a song about two people killing each other. And I was like,
Yeah.
But she's like, I watched this news report, and it was this couple that were married and ended up shooting each other. So I was like, okay, this is a good challenge.
Yeah.
So we made it into a song that was like, go ahead and kill me now, a kind of not cheeky, but like nudge, you know, like, you know, this is nothing I haven't felt before.
Oh, okay.
Just go ahead and kill me now. And it was such a good challenge, but I loved it because,
yeah,
you know, if anybody else would have been like, let's write this, I'd be like, I don't know.
You know what? One thing I think I've learned, when I get in a co-write and something hits the table, and people are like, oh, I don't think we can do that, I get really interested. And
yeah.
I like won't let it go. Because I see, to me, when people are freaking out about something, it's pay dirt. There's pay dirt in there.
Interesting.
Because it's already making everybody uncomfortable. So most things are polarizing. So if people hate something, there are also people that want to hear about it. If everybody's saying don't write about this or get away from that, it's like, man, maybe that's a good place to dig around.
Yeah. You could do like an opposite pitch sheet.
Yeah. Well, they'll say, you know, nobody wants to hear a heartbreak song. It's like, bullshit.
Yeah.
They just, you write a good one, it'll work because people are heartbroken.
Right. Eventually people see through it, you know?
Everybody
has to do their job from a real place.
Yeah, and we're moving into an era, or we're in an era now where authenticity is key.
Yeah.
And I personally think it's because of streaming. Now, I'm not 100% sold that every country artist needs to write all their record. Clearly, I'm biased.
Right.
But if they're a great songwriter, that's great.
Yeah.
But if there are outside songs that really would work and fit and are great tools to get them in front of more people, I think opportunity is missed there.
Yeah.
But we're in a different age, and it's better. I think the music's better.
Yeah. I mean, and now
it's way better.
Now songwriters that didn't think that they were artists can release songs.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
be artists.
Yes.
Because it is an art, and if nobody wants to cut it.
I'll tell you something, man. don't you think all songwriters are artists? Even if they're like me, just like co-writers who get in all kind of different situations. But I think they're all, I think they're all right. They're all
100%, 100%. And many years ago in town, it's like, are you a songwriter or an artist?
I'd be right.
Like, both. Like, well, it's almost like pick a lane.
Yeah. But, pick a lane.
But I've never felt like that. I never felt like, well, I have to pick this lane. It's like, these are the one and the same.
Yeah.
And one shouldn't cancel out the other.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. So, say you're making your next record. One of your buddies wrote a song, and it just floored you.
Yeah.
I mean, just floored you. And you thought that a lot of people would love it. Would you consider putting it on your record?
And the person didn't cut it.
Correct. There's no, you're not recutting something that's already out.
Yes, probably. If I loved it that much. The way I've always usually gone about my records is like I called Daniel Tashin on the last one and said, hey, let's have 2 weeks. First week, we'll write all the songs that we're going to record the next week. So we're getting that moment in time. I know we'll have something that'll be, I mean, hopefully, it was, you know, good. And,
and we're going to document what we did.
It was so much fun just to have that, you know, that plan. It's like, all right, we're going to write all these songs and then we're going to actually track them and then we'll put the record out. I didn't want to overthink anything, and it was very exciting to just try to make that happen. And with this new record, Positano, I did the same sort of thing. And what was so amazing is like the day before I was going to track the last song for the record, I'm writing with this guy, Eli Templin, who lives in LA, and he is a piano player, singer, and it was so inspiring that day. Like, he came in, he had co-written a ton, I don't think, but he said something about a rough patch, and I was like, man, I've written so many songs with people, never heard that title, and we really got in it and wrote this song for him that is one of my favorite songs I've ever been a part of. And to me, it was like, even if this song never goes anywhere and I feel like the world can hear it, then that little kid in me is kind of like, yes, we did it, you know?
Right.
It's worth it. I get so excited. And I was like, man, I don't know what you're doing tomorrow, but I'm writing my last song. I'd love it if you join me, if you want to write for it. Like, basically, yeah. I'm writing and recording my last song. And he's like, sure. So next day, he's in there. He plays a couple chords. It was so inspiring. And we wrote the song on my record that I think is the best song. And it was like the last day with a person that I'd never met till 2 days before. So
when it works right, it's just such, it's so great.
Yeah.
It's such a great feeling.
And I'm with you. I'm like, I want positive people around me.
Yep.
I want optimism around me.
Yep.
And all the haters and naysayers can go somewhere else.
Agreed. You know, what you focus on, you become. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
You focus on, you become. So this idea of what you know, speaking something into existence is what we do as writers.
Mm-hmm.
But also in our lives, words have real power.
I get how you feel about that, because, man, it's such a bad, like, when those voices get in your head.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Do not believe everything you think. My little lizard monkey brain throws all kind of bullshit at me.
Mm-hmm.
All kind of bullshit all day long.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to learn to just go next.
Yeah.
Because it's not true.
I went on an artist retreat one time, and it wasn't just songwriters. It was like there was a woman that worked at Pixar. There was a comedian. There was several actors. And I was lucky enough to go, and it was in British Columbia. And you're just in this beautiful place with a bunch of artists, and there was no agenda. There wasn't like a speaker or anything, except for the last day, like, this guy that I know spoke for like 10 minutes. And I will never forget this. He played the Tom Waits song, Take It With Me When I Go, which is like mm-hmm. one of the best songs of all time, yep. in my opinion. And he showed a clip of A Beautiful Mind, and the whole premise of that movie was it Russell Crowe?
Like, yeah.
And yeah. He has these voices in his head, and the children, I'm ruining this if anybody hasn't seen the movie, but the voices in his head are like his children. And this speaker said, ever since I was a little kid, I've had these voices in my head that tell me things, you know, always, and it's the negative stuff. And he's like, you're not good enough, you're overweight. I don't even remember exactly what those things were. And he's like, does anybody else have those voices in their head? Of course, you have like 50 adults in this room, and it's gnarly. You're like, he's like, can you just say them out loud? So everybody starts saying this stuff, and I'm like, this is crazy, like, fascinating. And he read this one passage of scripture, and he's like, those voices aren't from God.
Mm-mm.
And we're going to pray, you're going to go pray that God takes these voices away. And I'm kind of in the back with my arms folded, not trying to be a skeptic about it, but anytime I feel like hard pressed emotionally in mm-hmm. a situation like that, I'm like always pushing the other way. And suddenly, they drop us off on different parts of this island just to be alone for 15 minutes and pray about those voices. Well, I'm the last one off the boat, and I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden it was like a thunder. I mean, I felt like a 13-year-old kid, all emotional, you know, praying God would take those voices away. And then I thought I heard a black bear, and I jump in the water, and I'm swimming around. And it was like, I felt like God was, I straight up was hearing God's voice. But I felt so at peace, because it was like, he was saying, let go of that.
This isn't me.
Yeah.
It's not you either.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, these ways of thinking that are derogatory to ourselves.
Right. It's the shame virus is all
yeah.
that is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's a huge part of it. Having kids.
Guilt.
I'm kind of like, I'll say something and I'm like, oh my gosh, I sound like I'm shaming. And it's like the main reason everyone, you know, goes to therapy is and ends up talking about some sort of shame
yeah.
they felt. And, you know, that kind of circles back around to what we were saying earlier, which I feel like the best songwriting comes from shamelessness. And that's a hard thing to request when you're just meeting someone.
Yep.
It's just kind of like, hey, can you pretend mm-hmm. that you're carefree and nobody's judging this?
But have you had this experience? Because I know I have. Whenever I get in a room, even if I've never met them before, if I'm with really what I consider to be a good writer, like somebody who really knows what they're doing, man, they'll confess shit right there on the, they'll just plop shit on the table. It's not, it would be weird in any other setting.
Yeah.
You'll get in here with two people and have never met, and within 30 seconds, somebody's just confessing or talking about something very deep
yeah.
personal feelings just come slamming out with strangers.
Yeah. Do you think that's, a Nashville thing, or that's everywhere? I'm not trying to make it a Nashville thing. I'm just curious.
No, it's a great question. I think it's more of a Nashville. What do you think? Is it a Nashville thing?
I've definitely experienced that here more.
Yeah.
I can say I do love it about this town.
I do too.
And I feel like a little bit, I think other people feel that as well. There was a pop artist that's amazing, and she's moving here. And I was like, why are you moving? And because she lives in LA, and she said, lyrics. I was like,
yeah.
Like something about me, I love that answer. I was like,
yes.
Man, that's really cool.
It's true. You know, even though the style of country music is very different from pop and hip hop and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Sonically. But I think they all those other genres look to Nashville, you know, in a different style, but I think that is the town, and I think that's why they come here.
Yeah. I love it.
Well, man, I think we're going to wrap up on that, because I could talk to you all day.
I
think you and I could we could go 8 hours. We could order lunch and keep going.
Yeah.
But I love talking to you, man, because this is the spirit of this podcast.
I've listened to everything, and I'm such a fan of it, and I feel like that people need, especially other artists and songwriters, need to know, like, that what they're feeling is normal.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I never thought of it that way. Yeah, that what they're going through and what happens to them happens to a lot of people when they do this.
Yeah.
And it's easy to get discouraged. Did you have times that were tough when you first started here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When it came down to writing, for sure. Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing. Because it was being thrown to the wolves, and just the musical blind dating was so overwhelming. It was like, I don't really know what I'm supposed to bring anymore. Mm-hmm. And I see that a lot in newer folks here, you know?
Yeah.
Where I can already predict, okay, they're just going to feel burnt out this time next year because they're writing so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there was a moment of that where it was like, what else can I bring here? I need to be inspired.
And yeah.
I think the moment that I got more inspired, it was when that I was done with all of that blind date stuff. Yeah, and it was kind of like, now I can just call the people that I make sense with. And
yeah, there is, I think, a going to the gym aspect of being thrown into that.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not so much fun, but
you're learning.
You're building muscles.
Yes, 100%. I agree.
There is part of that. I think it is good. Did you ever have a moment, you know, or moments where you're just like, I can't do this?
I think I did.
Can I do this?
I did in several sessions where I'm kind of like feeling way out there rather than on the same page with that person.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I'm like trying to explain something and they have no idea. They're not going through the same thing. Just in the process of unpacking an idea for a song, and then, you know, when you're in front of the musical mannequin and it's like, what am I doing? Like, what?
Right. And they're
are we participating?
They just want to cut.
Yeah.
Who's going to cut this song? Yeah. Dierks Bentley will never say this. Next.
Yeah. I can't do it.
Yeah. It's tough.
That's and those creatively debilitating moments. That's when I kind of start going, what am I doing this for again? And then I just have to knock those voices out, like mm-hmm. we're talking about, and realize that because I want to feel the same way I did the first time I heard Jeff Buckley play in front of me in Memphis, I want to be a wave on that ocean. And that's what I want to die trying to do, is just make people feel like that.
I love that. You know, I can't stop talking to you, man. Last night I was thinking, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? You know, and it's what you said. And this project I'm doing is very different for me. It's nothing that I do for a living. It's a totally different kind of music. And I was sitting there. I had that thought of, this is so crazy for you to be spending a lot of time on. Why are you doing this? And you said it. It's like, I remember there's a record when I was young that came out that was this style.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a huge impact on me. I just played it a million times. It just did something to me mm-hmm. that I loved. And I do just want to be a wave on that ocean.
Yeah. Every time I'll write a bunch of different types of songs and then think, this should be the sound of my record. No, this should be, because I work with all these different people. So I feel like creatively pulled in different directions. And then the advantage of having a manager like mine is that she can say, why don't you just go make your John Lennon record or your Neil Young sounding record? But basically knowing if I do anything that even feels like them, I'll be proud of it.
Right.
If it points back to what...
If you get in that spot.
Yes. If I get to that core of like why I started this in the first place,
mm-hmm.
if anything points back to that, then I'll be proud of it.
It's like the ultimate like fan letter.
Yeah.
Right? To something that you love. Like you love Neil Young.
Yeah. I geeked out went up to him, started talking to him when he was in town.
Yeah.
I mean, I would never do this now, but thank God I was delusional enough to approach him. Well, what I said was, I was so overjoyed. I was
this
like,
after a show?
Well, I watched I went to the Ryman documentary, Jonathan Demme, Heart of Gold documentary taping. And I was just like in the fetal position, losing my mind. My wife was like, what is happening? I was like, I don't know. I can't explain it. And then the next day he was at a pub, like on Demumbrium. And I looked up and I saw him there and he started walking out. Of course, I go towards him. I'm overzealous. And I didn't even know I said, I love this man. I said, I love this man, to Neil Young. And he looks up, he's like, thanks. And I was like, look, I know you get this every day, million times, million and one right here, but your music is the reason I moved to this city. It's like, what made me want to be a writer? And he's like, so you're a writer? And I was like, yeah. He said, oh, that's good. You know, my dad told me to write every day, and if it's not good, throw it away. And I'm getting advice from my hero right now.
Yeah, good advice.
Good advice, good solid advice that I listened to and applied immediately.
Wow, it's so funny when you meet somebody like that who's such a rock star, and then you realize that they're songwriters, man. I mean, they're real deal. You know, Jimmy Webb is one of my personal heroes. He's not as active now, but when I was a kid, he had a bunch of great songs with Glenn Campbell, and I love Jimmy Webb. I just love him. And he played ASCAPs maybe 7 years ago when it was at the Ryman, and he did like a 5-song medley in the middle of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And man, same thing. When you said your wife.
It was just.
Oh, I thought Amy was just grabbing me. I was sobbing uncontrollably. And I mean, we were on the flipping front row. I had a couple songs that year I got awards for, and we were right up front. And I mean, I just came apart.
Yeah.
Watching him do those songs. I mean, I couldn't control it.
I'm so transparent in that way where it's like, I can't pretend to like not be fazed by something.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's people that
I think that I can, but I probably don't. The people who know me know. Man, it has been an absolute joy to talk to you.
I love it. It's been so good.
I can't wait to, you got your current record out now. How long's that record been out?
It's been out a couple months.
Okay.
And I'm going to go on a tour with Need to Breathe and open for them.
Oh, really? That's a great band, man.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We're going to play all these theaters. And yeah. They're really great. They're really great guys. And in between there, I'm just working on a lot of records with different artists.
I'm sure, yeah.
So,
you're quite in demand.
I'm gonna keep going.
That's awesome. Well, it's been again, I'll say it again, an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I hope we can talk again.
We will.
When we get into season 3, man. Thank you for listening. Trent Dabbs on Pitch List. Thanks for listening to this episode of Pitch List. And don't forget to head over to our YouTube page at Pitch List Podcast to watch exclusive performances from this episode. And if you like the show, be sure to follow us on social media or head to pitchlistpodcast.com for more content and updates. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on Pitch List.